Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a very timely show. We're going through a lot of changes in our country, and it's a lot of growing pains, frankly, and people are, I think, really learning what constitutes freedom and what power means. And I don't subscribe to labels. You know, you're a human being. Doesn't matter what color you are, doesn't matter your persuasion. And I think that's one thing that we all have to come to terms with. Stop labeling ourselves because it's dividing and conquering us. And we've seen a clean out of the conservative voice on various platforms. And I don't subscribe to muzzling people. If you can cite your source and back up your argument, you should be happy to have a conversation with somebody. The fact that you have to shut them down, I have question marks about that. Today, I want to have a talk with a representative of the Association of Mature American Citizens, also called AMAC, which is an organization that represents those of us who don't label ourselves, but have an allegiance to freedom, to values, to family. And there's nothing wrong with that. And as we all, when we're going to be here, we're going to get older, we need advocacy for us and for our movement. And today we're going to have Mr. Andy Mangione. Is it Mangione or Mangione?
Mangione.
Mangione. He's Senior Vice President for AMAC's advocacy arm, AMAC Action, and he leads an outreach activity across the country and also represents the interests of the association's membership in Washington, D.C. He has a diverse professional background from sales and marketing in medical devices and pharmaceutical industry and managed care sectors. And he now is involved in charting the policy course for AMAC Action and the subsequent execution of legislative strategies. He also represents AMAC as a national spokesperson, and he frequently writes for their media and contributes to national online publications. So this is somebody who understands the ins and outs and can actually speak and be a voice in D.C., which is that's yeoman's work these days, Mr. Mangione, I think.
Oh, I agree with you, particularly right around in the next 10 days. It's going to get tougher, but, you know, we're up for the battle. We've been here before with previous administrations, but we know we're happy to represent our members and their interests in Washington, regardless of who's in the White House.
I agree. And it shouldn't be who's in the White House. It should be us as individuals and as citizens of this country, instead of, you know, voting or rooting for your team when it's obvious at this point your team doesn't represent you. And I don't care if it's right or left. I think it's us against them, honestly, those in power versus those of us who put them in there to be voices for us. And I want to, you know, go back, and how did AMAC start? What's the foundation of it?
Well, AMAC was started in 2007 by a private individual. His name was Dan Weber, and unfortunately, we lost Dan in February of last year. Dan's background was very humble. He's born in Brooklyn, New York. He lived on Long Island, went to high school. And while he was in high school, he started a landscaping business. He saw the value of hard work at a very early age. Right out of high school, he joined the Air Force and married his high school sweetheart. And he worked very hard. Okay, he was in the Air Force for 4 years, had a couple of kids along the way. And when he came out of the Air Force, after he was honorably discharged, he picked up a bag and went to work for Allstate Insurance. And he got into the insurance industry. After 10 years and a couple more kids later, Dan started his own insurance agency on Long Island. He worked very hard. And, you know, joking here, like everybody from New York, when he retired, he moved to Florida and he joined AARP. And this was during one of the George W. Bush administrations. He was watching, I think it was Fox News. And he noticed that Harry Belafonte went to Venezuela and was standing next to Hugo Chavez. and watched them on Fox News call George W. Bush the biggest terrorist on the face of the planet. Shortly thereafter, his AARP magazine arrived, and on the cover was Harry Belafonte being honored as Humanitarian of the Year. And he thought that this organization, AARP, didn't necessarily represent him or his views. And he looked around for an alternative, and there was none. So he literally took his own funds and started up AMAC as a private citizen in 2007. So what we are is a member benefits organization, Dr. George. We represent Americans who are age 50 plus. And our business model is identical to AARP's in that, you know, you spend $16 to join AMAC. It covers your household and you have access to all kinds of member benefits. This is not going to be a pitch for the benefits, but very similar sources, insurance products, lifestyle products, et cetera. Okay. Roadside assistance, travel discounts, things like that. But what Dan really wanted to do with AMAC was to give seniors who are conservative a voice in Washington. He felt that voice was underrepresented. That's where AMAC action comes in. This was back in 2007. AMAC has members in all 50 states. We have over 2.3 million dues-paying members. And if you've ever been to Washington, there's a lot of people running around there saying, I represent this group and we have 5 gazillion members. Mm-hmm. And what they really have is an email list. Our members, our 2.3 million, these are dues-paying members. And we're adding between 5,000 and 6,000 new members a week. Dues paying, and importantly, we're getting about between 2,000 and 4,000 members a week to renew. So when people join AMAC, they stick around. So we started from very humble beginnings in 2007, and here it is 2021 with a growing, thriving membership. And I'm privileged to represent them in Washington. And with regard to issues, we do have signature issues, Dr. George, that our members direct us. So when somebody joins AMAC, You know, the question is, why should I join? What they would do, what they're doing when they do join AMAC, Dr. George, they're joining a member-driven organization. Our members chart the course for our policy. They tell us the issues that bothers them or they're concerned with, and we take that to Washington. So as you can imagine, the solvency of Social Security is a top issue for our members. So is the price of healthcare, the cost of healthcare, and that's all of the above. That's prescription costs, that's, you know, healthcare costs, doctor visits. It's a very diverse issue for our members. They're concerned about the debt. You know, they like to see the budget balanced, you know, but and of course with this past election, the election integrity issue is a big issue for our members now that came to the fore as a result of the general election. But our members tell us what they're concerned with, and we take those issues to Washington on their behalf.
Well, that's an excellent overview. And I want to ask you, in D.C., I've been up there multiple times trying to advocate for doctors, independent doctors and patients, and you get a lot of lip service. And they claim that they know what the problems are, but I don't think they really know. Do you feel like they're... And it's a loaded question, obviously, a disconnect between what you're representing, when you lobby, when you go up there, whoever meets with you and their real understanding and their real ability to listen to your members. And I'm going to let you answer that because we got to take a break it's going to be a long answer, so I don't want to cut you off. So let's come back after the break, and you're listening to Living in Solution. Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Andy Mangione. He's a senior vice president for AMAC's advocacy arm called AMAC Action. And before the break, I asked a pointed question about what it's like to try to get people on Capitol Hill to listen to your members. It's a lot of people. And, you know, I know that all they care about is getting back in. So what's been your experience with this? Have you had people who are advocates and start to pick up the ball from what your members are asking them to do?
We have, you know, it's an interesting question because I feel and I believe that I've experienced the same thing you have. Now, there are members that we deal with, members of Congress, that are very in tune, and they're there for the right reason. They want to help and they want to represent their constituents, but they want to, make America They want to fix the problems that are troubling America right now. You know, with regard to healthcare, we've had the opportunity to work with multiple physician groups, and you know, we would be representing patients. Okay, mm-hmm. we're 2.3 million patients. That's what we bring to the table. And I recall having meeting after meeting after meeting with members, staff in the same office, or you know, multiple members, staff in multiple offices, but several meetings. And then we see legislation where it was not what we wanted, not necessarily what we wanted, but not what we discussed. And when we bring up a specific question as to a portion of that legislation, they'll ask a question that we have already answered over and over and over again. That is very frustrating. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that these people's hearts aren't in the right place, because they generally are. But there is, in some cases, I'm not going to broad stroke this, Dr. George, but there are some cases there is a disconnect where you can do all the educating that you want and you think you make your point, and then you end up with a piece of legislation that could be 180 degrees away from what you discussed multiple times. Doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen. And that is very frustrating.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you made a statement that, you know, they care about the temperature or how the whole country works. But, you know, my argument to that is, as the seniors go, so does the rest of the country. Medicare, Social Security, these are huge ticket items for the government. If they could actually work with organizations like yourself, who understand how to keep the price cheap, price transparency, all these things where they empower the patient to become consumers, that benefits the entire country. Can they not see that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they've come to us. Okay. You mentioned price transparency. People talk about, you know, you can't throw up your arms. How do we lower the cost of healthcare? Well, how about changing the way it's delivered? How about, you know, allowing physicians the opportunity to practice what they learned in medical school? All right. Instead of spending 40% of their time chasing down payers, I'm talking about the independent practice, you know, the independent practitioners, where you can find them.
Yep.
Okay. But with regard to, for example, price transparency, this is a huge free market. AMAC believes in free markets. We look through the lens of free markets to solve the problems that are facing America. Okay. So price transparency brings to the table a tremendous free market tool. Well, you know, and it's almost absurd that we have to mention this, Dr. George, but, you know, you go through your life, you buy big ticket items, you buy a house, you buy a car, you finance your kids' educations. But the only thing we don't know what costs up front is the cost of a medical procedure. Well, you know, President Trump has resolved that. For now, okay, that's, you know, we could talk about that. But the point that I'm making is, with regard to AMAC and price transparency, we you know, there was an executive order that was issued. When HHS opened up their website for comments on how to craft the rule to comply with the executive order, AMAC members represented 80% of all the comments left on that website. Through a call to action that we did. So our members' voice does get through. And the end result, that rule that came out, was pretty much what we expected it to be based on the advocacy work that we did, among other groups. And we weren't the only people leaving comments. There were many physicians leaving comments. And mm-hmm. everyone had a say in it. And we ended up with a favorable rule that's being challenged. But, you know, that part of the process is very satisfying. So we can't get our message across. But it is... You have to be vigilant, you have to be consistent, and you have to spend a lot of time feeling frustrated.
It's yeoman's work, honestly, because, you know, lesser people would give up. And maybe that's the whole point. It's lip service, it's break your will, it's keep the status quo no matter what. And, you know, I think this is, again, everything happens, in my opinion, God's driving things. We're getting a peek under the hood how this sausage is made, all this other nonsense that they tell us. And it's not right. They don't care about what we want. And the only way is to exert pressure. One is to make sure you hire somebody, vote the people in who actually come from your midst, right? I mean, if you're going to get somebody who's coming from the mindset, you know, they've, as a citizen, understand where AMAC is coming from, that's the best advocate, as opposed to someone getting fed from lobby groups and people who want to, you know, help them get back in the next time. They're likely to pay more lip service than they are to actually do something for you.
Precisely. One of the things that we mention to offices, to members of Congress and the members of the Senate, is if they want to put the finger on the pulse of mature Americans, come to us. Mm-hmm. We talk to our members. You know, we openly engage with them. We poll them. We read their comments on our website. Some of them write op-eds, you know, that we publish. But we can poll messaging. We can poll ideas. And we've done it before. And that's again, Dr. George, that's extremely satisfying. But I like the comment that you made was, you know, as seniors go, you know, with regard to healthcare is how America goes, particularly with Medicare. And, we're still dealing with a pandemic right now. But there are some good things that are coming out of this. And obviously, the tragic loss of life isn't one of them. Mm-mm. But, you know, you're seeing some innovations that were kind of on the outskirts and on the periphery of healthcare. Mm-hmm. Things like telemedicine, and particularly for seniors and in, you know, seniors in rural areas. This has been a tremendous help. And so, you know, this is innovation that will go beyond Medicare and with regard to care. And, you know, we keep an eye on Medicare. We keep an eye on what our members have to say about, you know, Medicare Advantage, about in addition to their Part D benefits and the prices. You know, I mean, we saw some tremendous growth with regard to the battle of keeping prices down, particularly those on insulin, with a specific announcement that that President Trump made throughout his presidency in lowering the cost of insulin and lowering Part B prices as mm-hmm. well as Part D prices. And we hope that that momentum continues into the next administration.
I mean, he did a really nice job with making us a favored nation in terms of being able to shop for the lowest price. I mean, for years, we were literally subsidizing the world. We're paying more than everybody else, and we were supposed to like it. I mean, it absolutely made no sense. But I speak about this on the show quite a bit. The whole cartel, really, of Big Pharma was designed really to have the drug as expensive as possible, and then every middleman and, you know, these mm-hmm. PBMs yeah. feed at the trough, and they yes. absolutely did nothing while they're giving people supposed rebates, and they lined up with favored pharmacies and the insurance companies. It was really just completely nauseating. And it's also what fed, you know, lobby groups, I think, on Capitol Hill, right?
Absolutely. And the rebate rule in particular, I happened to be at the announcement when the president, and you might have been there too, Dr. George, when President Trump back in July of 2020 announced four executive orders, and one of them was the rebate rule. That and I'm sure you've spoken to it, but it's so pertinent to our demographic, to our membership, mm-hmm. where drug companies that pay these, and I'm using air quotes here, these rebates to pharmacy benefit managers, what they're doing is buying access to the insured lives that these PBMs have, and everybody knows, they know the names of these PBMs because they see the statements that they receive on a monthly basis, but they don't really know what the pharmacy benefit managers do. Now, there was a time when the pharmacy benefit managers simply acted as a person to administer a third-party benefit for a corporation that kind of lightened the load for Human Resources Department. But they don't know that back in the early 2000s, they were granted a safe harbor where they could charge drug companies literally access fees to the contracts of millions of insured lives that they manage. And some of this translated into favorable formulary status on these PBM contracts. And these rebates were supposed to be used to lower drug premiums. What they did do is, or insurance premiums, I should say, what they did do was inflate the list cost of prescription drugs on the outpatient supply chain. And everyone paid it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what the rebate rule did, you know, President Trump's executive order back in July was have the pharmacy benefit manager share these rebates they get from the drug manufacturers with Medicare beneficiaries at the point of purchase. In other words, at the pharmacy counter to lower their out-of-pocket expenses. Now, the PBM lobby is fighting this, and understandably, this is not a surprise, But what kind of an impact would this have if you're a senior citizen, you're living on a fixed income, and all of a sudden you're getting some relief on the out-of-pocket expenses mm-hmm. that you're paying for your medications? This is what our members have been telling us they want. And this is what happened with that rule, and the PBM lobby is fighting it.
It's obscene, quite frankly. And, you know, they're so mercenary. They went for the medications that people would have to take to save their lives and to have a quality of life, like, you know, insulin, you know, gosh, for us in the ear, nose, and throat, they were jacking up or have jacked up the price of eardrops and glaucoma medication. I mean, so they know they got you because you can't live without the medication. And it wasn't like a small amount. We're talking hundreds of percentage points, right? So now something that was maybe $10 went to like $200. It was just crazy. And no empathy, no sympathy. It's just completely toxic. And I think the pendulum has to swing back. And the fact that you just mentioned that, is that something that AMAC is highlighting, that these PBMs are trying to take away from seniors something that they deserve and they have a right to? And quite frankly, all of us have a right to not be gouged, to stay healthy. Is that something that...
Dr. George.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
No, please go.
We've been screaming from the mountaintops for going on 3 years now, the role of PBMs in the outpatient prescription supply chain and their role in it and how they inflate costs. I've written pieces on it and actually was called by... an organization that represents, let's just say that by a lobbying organization in Washington after my piece came out, and it was all sourced and I used government data, and it was, you know, with links to every single one of my sources, and they still said that, look, your information is wrong. And, I said, well, I'll tell you what, you know, if you can show me a study that shows that that pharmacy benefit managers actually lower costs. Okay. This might have been, you know what, I take that back. This might have been a group purchasing organization. Okay. So it wasn't that it was, but GPOs have the same type of structure in place. They have the same safe harbor and they just deal with the hospital supply chain. The inpatient supply chain, including medications. But this person, you know, I wrote about PBMs and GPOs in this piece, Dr. George, mm-hmm. and I get a call from a GPO lobbying firm that said that what I wrote was wrong. And I said, fine, then send me a study that you guys did not pay for that shows that what you do actually saves money. That was in March of 2018, and I'm still waiting to hear from them.
On that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Andy Mangione. Before the break, that was just a stunning statement about how you threw the gauntlet down and they disappeared. Gee, I wonder why that happened. You know, I've also heard something called something by the term of Chuck Bucks, which I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but that's the money that they draft, I should say, off of their PBMs, and it goes right into Congress to support various organizations and congressional entities. And I just, that's got to be cleaned up. And actually, you know, this reminds me of something. Maybe we can take a different approach to this. I know that DC, this is what you do, you're an advocacy group, but is there any kind of thought or movement towards using your membership as literally the fulcrum? So instead of, I'm an independent doctor, for example. American Association of Physicians and Surgeons are all independent doctors. If your membership would and use what's there, we have an infrastructure. You have direct primary care practices where people spend a certain amount per month locked and everything is covered, blood work, seeing the doctor, et cetera, that we could just withdraw our consent from a system that's completely corrupt. I mean, hopefully it's going to get cleaned out, but let's not wait. Let's make it so. If Twitter and Amazon are losing, or was it Face, whatever the heck it was, $51 billion because people have just dropped them, why can't we do the same thing in this regard?
That's a really, really good question. And, you know, you mentioned direct primary care. AMAC has been on record as huge supporters of direct primary care. We expose our members to it. We've supported legislation that allows people to use their HSAs and their HRAs to pay for direct primary care membership. We would love to see a direct primary care physician be able to treat Medicare patients, and they can. We know that they can, mm-hmm. But they just can't duplicate the services that Medicare pays for. Mm-hmm. But it would be nice, if they could use part of the Social Security money to pay for direct primary care membership. That's probably the medical equivalent to cutting the cord with your cable company. Mm-hmm. These direct primary care physicians are they're wonderful. They do everything. They dispense drugs from their offices, depending on the state that they live in. They're there for you. You can go see them if you need stitches as opposed to going to an emergency room. But what you're talking about is the equivalent of cutting the cord in the cable industry. If people are thinking, wait, this will happen, with our population and then Medicare folks. Now, a lot of our membership still works. Okay, because mm-hmm. I believe our average age is about 63, so folks are not quite retired yet, but a lot of our members are. This could play very big, and it takes education. People need to know they need to go to the computer and they need to search for direct primary care in whatever city they live in, mm-hmm. and then they have a conversation. I don't think people realize that you could take a direct primary care membership and then you could marry it up with some kind of catastrophic insurance policy and pay cash for your drugs, that hopefully you can get dispensed through your direct primary care physician, depending on the state that they're in, and realize that this could be a little bit or a lot, could be in some cases significantly cheaper than, having a family health care policy. There's a lot of education that has to go on. We've been educating our members on DPC. We've attended DPC conferences, and we support, we have a great relationship with DPC doctors and their association in supporting legislation that expands their use and kind of takes the shackles off of them and allows people to access them easier than they can now.
Well, from a scientific, I'm a scientist, so doing studies and doing research and giving real-time numbers, well, maybe that would wake up the powers that be, that when they were trying to do the same thing, expect a different result. That was my main complaint about the Affordable Care Act, was that they doubled down on the most expensive aspects of our healthcare system. There was no cost savings. They didn't care about that. They just wanted us all shoved in to one size fits all. All our money keeps going up away from patient care to administrators who could give a darn and don't know what the heck they're doing. So from, let's say you took a group of folks from AMAC, a few thousand, and they all did this, and then you put it out as a paper as the cost savings, because you're right, DPC is no joke. Some people don't even have to pay for the medications because it's so cost effective for the monthly fee. It's all rolled into it. And forget about the social and the medical side, where time, this is where the patients, I think, really complain. I know I do as a physician. Well, I don't, because I'm an independent doctor. But had I not been, I would have been complaining about how little time I get to spend with my patients, because it's the time between the doctor and the patient that helps patient care, because you have time to get a history, because you have time to get to know them. That's not idle. That's actually getting to the root cause of the problem, getting to the problem before it becomes a crazy situation. I mean, all these things, all these dominoes over the years that have fallen because of expedience and lack of care is what's costing everybody more money. And quite frankly, I think it's the root cause of people coming against each other. Someone has the feeling that you took it from somebody else and I'm just done with it. Personal responsibility. And you can't have it if you don't have knowledge, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you talk about it, we would love to be part of some, some kind of test, some kind of clinical trial, mm-hmm. For lack of better words, but some kind of trial where a white paper could be produced. We've our members are active, Dr. George. Our members are very engaged. They, from a political perspective, they vote for dog catcher. They vote in primaries. They vote, they vote for school board. They are up on the issues. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we've discovered about our members is that they don't want to be told what to do. They want to be informed, and then they want to know their options, and then they'll make the decision themselves. And when you talk about Obamacare, you know, forcing a strict set of benefits, regardless if you needed them or not, this thing was doomed to fail from the beginning. And it's still, we can rehash the horror stories of Obamacare, but they're out there, and there's many, many thousands of them, the horror stories. But in what you're talking about can be done. You know, it can be done. And when you talk about the time that a physician spends with a patient, that's, you know, this is, you know, you have, I don't know how many years, I'm guessing 10, 15 years of postgraduate training.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people want their physician to lay their hands on them, okay, and to heal them. And this is what physicians want to do, as opposed to practicing defensive medicine. Medicine, you know, and regardless, and then when I was in the industry, I'm not a physician by any means, but when I was in, you know, medical devices and pharmaceuticals, years ago, we had physicians telling me that they were encouraging their children not to study medicine because of all of the third-party payer hassles. And so I think we're losing a lot of very bright people that are studying engineering and are maybe turning to law, even though there's a glut of lawyers out there, as opposed to, you know, our wonderful medical schools that we have here in this country that need to be filled up with the best and the brightest studying medicine. There will be a shortage as a result of, if there isn't already, but there will be a shortage of physicians as a result of how the system is currently set up. And that doesn't benefit anybody, particularly our senior citizens.
No, I would agree absolutely with that. And, you know, it's interesting because the seniors are so integral to our history and our society, but no one, they're kind of sidelined in a weird way. You only hear about Medicare, but you don't hear about the personal story. And I think the pandemic has brought that out, where people are in senior citizen or assisted living or anything like that. They really have been put upon. And where does AMAC stand with that? Because that's a different patient base or different membership base compared to your average member.
We worked with the Republican Study Committee to look at, this is just so heartbreaking. Last spring during the pandemic, you saw governors in states like in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and New York, California, send COVID-19 patients who were COVID-19 positive patients who were discharged from a hospital and sent them to assisted living facilities and nursing homes. And then you saw a disproportionate number of COVID-19 deaths. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked with Steve Scalise, Representative Scalise of the Republican Study Committee. He sent a letters to these physicians or to these governors asking them, what was the science that you used to make these decisions? And please tell us, you know, because should there be a surge in this down the road, we want to avoid the mistakes that we're making now. And this is, you know, fairly early on in the pandemic when we were still learning about it. Okay. But we did know that, you know, not being, you know, I mean, I don't think Governor Cuomo has a medical degree, but sending, I mean, we heard from our members. We had stories from our members that were calling us saying, number one, I can't see my father-in-law because they won't let me in. And number two, I live in New York and my mother just died alone from COVID, and our governor is discharging COVID-19 patients who are, you know, the people that are infected with this into nursing homes. And all of a sudden there's, you know, this one facility lost a bunch of people due to this virus.
Mm-hmm.
We are working, you know, we worked with the study committee, to get answers to this. And to get to the bottom of, to make sure that these horrible decisions weren't repeated. But it's tragic what happened. And we've supported legislation that has, tightened nursing home education, tightened nursing home infection prevention, standards. This legislation came out probably last quarter of 2020. We supported it. We're happy to support it. We'll see if it becomes law, but it was long overdue, even before, you know, COVID-19, because you had other flus that were infecting people in nursing homes. But, you know, our ear was to the ground, and we worked at, you know, any avenue that we could, particularly on a federal level, to get answers to these questions.
Is that the same thing as the Bill 4866?
Yep.
Okay.
4866, the nursing home reform. We are on record. December 4th, we sent a letter to Casey and Toomey.
Okay.
So yeah, we could talk. We could talk about that.
Yeah, let's go.
I've got the information.
Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Andy Mangione. He is the Senior Vice President for AMAC's advocacy arm, AMAC Action. And you can go to their website, amac.us, amac.us, and you should join because this is about our future. And before the break, we were speaking about the legislation to strengthen the health, really, of our seniors who are the least able to protect themselves in these nursing homes and assisted living homes. They may have no advocates for them. And you're right. It was tragic what happened during this pandemic. I don't know what these governors were thinking. And I really pray that they be held accountable for this. So it was Bill 4866. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, we're talking about Senate Bill 4866. This was introduced by both senators from Pennsylvania, Senator Casey and Senator Toomey. So it's bipartisan. All right. And what the bill does is increases oversight for those long-term care and nursing home facilities that have repeatedly failed to meet Medicare and Medicaid standards in areas like infection control and prevention. All right. So it creates an advisory council that's comprised of, and this is what's interesting about this bill. It creates an advisory council that is comprised of diverse representation for older adults. So there'll be actual older adults on this advisory council. There'll be people with disabilities. There'll be state officials as well, and nursing home folks as well, all forming a council to advise Health and Human Services on how appropriately rank the performance of nursing home programs. It's called, they're inside the realm of the specialty focused facility program. Okay. But the bottom line here is that they are creating much needed oversight. They're diversifying an advisory council that includes, well, people that are older that would be in a nursing home, as well as people with disabilities, nursing home administrators, state officials, okay, and all lining up to or working to advise HHS on how to reel in these facilities that have been chronic, that have failed chronically to meet these Medicare and Medicaid standards.
That would be just such a life-changing, altering, and quite frankly, money-saving pursuit, right? If everybody's healthy and they're not in ICUs and needing chronic long-term care, just how much money would that save everybody? And the best part of it is quality of life. You shouldn't have to, and as you're in your golden years, worry about being just forgotten. I don't think that's right. And empathy comes into play here. We're all going to be here at some point.
Without question, without question. And I'm glad that you zeroed in on quality of life. As I mentioned before, Dr. George, AMAC sent a letter of support. We support this bill. And I do a lot of the writing on these letters of support, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But we zeroed in on the quality of care. We are grateful, you know, first of all, this sounds like it's something that should have been done years ago, okay? However, it's being proposed now, and they're deliberating. I don't know, it'll probably be reintroduced for the 117th Congress, but we really kept an eye on the quality of care for our seniors and make that quality of care a priority. And we think that this bill is a step in the right direction.
Well, I agree with you. I hope it passes. And are you, once you've gotten them to introduce the bill, I don't know how the system works. Do you still go and still advocate for it? Or now that they've taken it up,
sure,
they lead it?
Well, it's both. Okay. We have a wonderful software, advocacy software, where we get our members involved, where we can take a bill that we've supported on the federal level, and put it into our action center and expose our members to these bills where they can, with a couple of keystrokes, click on their zip code and they find their representative and they can send a quick message saying, hey, AMAC supports this bill as your constituent. I want you to support it too. Hmm. So it's an ongoing effort. It's really, really neat, that aspect of advocacy. But once we support a bill, we let our members know about it and hopefully drive them to that action center. So they're not just hearing from Andy. They're hearing from, you know, they're hearing from their constituents. Mm-hmm. And that's very powerful. It helps. It really gives us a huge assist in getting legislation passed.
Well, that sounds really nice and easy for the members. Like, it's just, it's hard when you have to kind of reinvent the wheel, but it's already there for you. There's no reason why you can't get your voice heard and have it. It's almost like it's automated the way you make it sound.
It is automated.
That's exactly awesome.
Right. We try to make it as easy as possible.
Wow. Well, I mean, again, it's another reason to join AMAC, honestly, because you amplify your voice. You're not the only one who thinks a certain way. And that's a big thing, where the megaphone of the media is highlighting a minority. It's a minority of people in the country who they've made seem like they're the majority. It's amazing. So this is another way to get to balance that. But you're not spending a ton of money in dues to do that, are you?
No, not at all. $16 for 1 year, and it covers you and your, it's a household, so you and your spouse. You'll get a whole roster of member discounts, but you get a voice in Washington. And we found over the years, Dr. George, that, you know, our member benefits are pretty robust. They are, but people join us because of what we do in Washington. They like being represented there, and they like having a say in the issues that we're bringing there as well. They like the education aspect of, you know, when we break down issues for them, when we poll them and ask them what's bothering them, what they'd like us to work on. So it's really, we are truly a member-driven organization. We don't sit in a boardroom and have discussions of what we're going to support, what we're not going to support. We totally rely on our members for that direction.
Well, I'm really impressed with the direction that AMAC has gone in. And I did notice that you guys, didn't you as an organization sign the Great Barrington Declaration?
Yes, we did. We just thought that it made sense. Okay. Now, it's funny because I didn't come across it right when it was introduced. Okay. So it had been out a little while. I just didn't see it. And it's one of those, you know, it's just one of those things with regard to, we all have busy days. Mm-hmm. But that said, you know, the Great Barrington Declaration came about as a result of studies led by an MD, PhD from Stanford, along with their colleagues. And they looked at information like the accuracy of COVID-19 fatality rates. They look at the risk for the virus among different age groups. And they also took into account how the lockdowns were affecting people. And the whole idea with the Barrington Declaration was to suggest a change in public policy. And it just made too much sense for us not to sign it. And we signed on behalf of our 2.3 million members. But, it just seems that, you know, just if you looked at the Great Barrington Declaration, it acknowledges that the understanding that we have the virus is growing. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. And we know that now that the vulnerability of death from COVID-19 is more than 1,000-fold higher in older people than the infirmed than the young. So, hey, why not open the schools? Okay. And it's like with the vaccine distribution. We know that the everybody over 65 should be vaccinated first because they're at the most risk. Yet, you know, you've got different protocols in different states. The CDC has guidelines, but ultimately it's up to the states. And, we do know that the folks that are at most risk are older folks, people, and also people that are compromised, people that have compromised health, you know, comorbidities. But the Great Barrington, getting back to the declaration, was one of the things that really drew us to signing this thing was what they called focused protection. Mm-hmm. And it's a compassionate approach. And I'm going to quote, if I can here, Dr. George, the compassionate approach as dictated by the Great Barrington Declaration balances the risks and benefits of reaching herd immunity and is to allow those who are at minimal risk of death to live their life normally, to build up the immunity to the virus through natural infection while better protecting those who are at the highest risk. That just made too much sense for us. And when we reviewed it, our CEO signed it.
Well, that's actually one of the foundations of infectious disease and medicine. And it does make sense because this is the only time that we've quarantined healthy people in our history.
Right?
It's the only time that everybody has to go down. But to what effect? People are committing suicide. Seniors are passing away before their time. Children are not learning anything. And the whole society is, we're not even engaged with each other anymore. It's all virtual almost. It's not working. And if you look at these states that have locked down, like California, they did it. They locked themselves down and their numbers are climbing. Then obviously masks and staying at home don't work, right?
You would think that they need to take a look at other things. The numbers don't lie.
No.
And it's a shame, you know, I've got school-aged children. I've got two high schoolers, and fortunately they're in the classroom right now. And I'm very grateful for that. But you take a 7-year-old little girl or a little boy, and you put them in front of the computer and you tell them to learn, they're just not wired to learn
that
way.
Neither are the teens. Let's face it. If there's no structure, you're going to do you and play video games. And, you know, I just keep seeing these ridiculous lesson plans about how you need to look at your social, you know, your worth in terms of your skin color. That's a whole nother conversation, but it's not right. I mean, I've never seen we're segregating ourselves. We're putting value on things that, I mean, Martin Luther King he'll see rolling around in his grave, content of character, not color of skin. That seems to be gone out the window. Now we have a couple of minutes left. I want to make sure that people know how to reach AMAC and anything that they know that's new that's going on. And I know we didn't get a chance to, and I really wish I should have stopped you further. But as a business, the AMAC members are wonderful, you know, I would think, advocates for small business and independent doctors and everybody who, I mean, these are our customers potentially, aren't they?
Absolutely. And again, a lot of our members own small businesses. And we've got a lot of retired physicians. And believe me, they've weighed in. They've weighed in on the pandemic, and they weigh in on other healthcare issues. But if somebody wants to join AMAC, they can go to AMAC, that's AMAC.us, www.amac.us, and join online. Or they could call 888-262-2006. That's toll-free, 888-262-2006. And they can enroll online. We have a whole host of member benefits, including all kinds of insurance products, Medicare products, under 65 health insurance, life insurance, auto insurance, and people receive discounts on the stuff that we market to them. But you also get a strong voice, a whole team of people lobbying and representing their interests on their behalf in Washington.
I think in this day and age, that is a powerful weapon, because it's all about us hanging together and making our voices heard. I want to thank you so much for coming on. It was an absolute pleasure having you.
The pleasure is mine, Dr. George. Thank you.
I'd love for you to come back if you have any more initiatives that you're working on. And if, you know, I'm sure that's a lot of things that we can speak about. I'm Adam, and I'm very passionate about the seniors and everybody getting their power back. And I love what you do, and I want to thank you for everything you do.
We appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk Events.